Hello and welcome to Hot Pursuit. I am here with my guest, Aykan Erdemir, who is based in Washington, D.C., Senior Program Director with Defense of Democracies Foundation. Welcome, Aykan.
Thank you.
Well, we'll speak about the context of the crisis in Eastern Mediterranean, of which Turkey is the epicenter, the main major actor. Initially, it was seen as the Turkey-Greece crisis, but it has transformed into, as days went by, Turkey versus European Union crisis, including Cyprus, also France as one of the major actors, but also European Union as a whole. So, awaiting the main summit of the European Union next week, 24th and 25th of September, the major summit in which Turkey is one of the top items as part of the crisis. But also there are very many other developments in that context, not only within the Eastern Mediterranean crisis, but also in the Middle East. Of course, each and every aspect of it brings us to the main point, Turkish foreign policy, Turkish regional policy, the Erdogan administration's choices in foreign policy. So I am very curious about hearing your assessments from the prism of United States, how the current administration or institutions in the American capital see this crisis, and where Turkey figures in the context of Middle East and also Eastern Mediterranean.
For the sake of simplicity, let's assume that there are two main ways of making sense of Turkey in Washington. The first one is more of a relic of the Cold War that still sees Turkey as a key NATO ally and an important counterweight, not only to Russia, but also to Iran. And this perspective, which is more of a realist perspective, would like to look the other way when it comes to the Erdogan government's transgressions, and advocates that Washington should accept Turkey as it is, you know, whether it's Islamist, whether it's neo-Ottoman, whether it's belligerent. It is a force to reckon and a force to work with. But this view, I would like to argue, is becoming not only marginal, but becoming really a minority opinion.
So you mean there's a perception change?
Yes, there is a radical shift in Turkey's perception in Washington, mm-hmm. which made this kind of Cold War relic perception a waning, marginal view. And everyone who follows U.S. politics would argue that it's a very divided, very polarized scene, with one exception, Turkey. There is unprecedented bipartisan, nonpartisan consensus in both houses of Congress, both in the Senate and in the House of Representatives when it comes to Turkey. That gives us the second, the new, but increasingly popular perception, and that is Turkey is not at all a counterweight to Russia and Iran, but on the contrary, is part of the problem compounding the Russian and Iranian threats in the region. And not
former French diplomat Gérard Araud, also one of the top diplomats of France, underlined this, that Russia, Iran, and Turkey are composing a cluster in this context.
So, and the problem is not only Turkey becoming a part of the problem, leaving behind its past as being part of the solution, compounding the destabilization triggered by Russia and Iran, but even takes matters to another level, for example, by being the second most important logistical center for Hamas outside Gaza, and hosting, you know, designated terrorists, senior leaders of Hamas in Istanbul by the Turkish president. To add to that, you know, the Trump administration's legacy project has been the Abraham Accords, you know, the rapprochement between Israel, the United Arab Emirates, and Bahrain. And Turkey becomes the most vocal opponent to these deals alongside Iran. And then in Syria and in Libya, there is, again, a destabilizing role Turkey plays, which was also recognized yesterday by the UN Special Commission on Syria, which accused Turkey and Turkey-backed forces of committing war crimes of the worst kind, you know, executions, torture, ill-treatment, rape, pillaging, looting. So when you put all of these together, I think we see a Turkey that's not only marginalized within NATO, marginalized within the Council of Europe, marginalized within the Western world, but we also see a Turkey that is, in the Turkish government's perspective, in a precious solitude. That's the term they coined, that Turkey is alone in the world because it upholds the highest moral values. But if you ask a wide range of actors in Europe and in the greater Middle East, Turkey is emerging as one of the main threats, as one of the main destabilizing actors. We have seen this in the statements of the Arab League. We have seen this in the seven Mediterranean member states of the European Union's, again, statement about Turkey. We are seeing this in the Eastern Mediterranean Gas Forum that brings together all Eastern Mediterranean actors except Turkey. So Erdogan's belligerent and irredentist rhetoric and policy is not only undermining regional stability, but it's hurting Turkey's political and economic prospects, isolating the country to unprecedented levels, and triggering alliances which would have been unthinkable a decade ago, as all the neighbors, near and far, cluster together, join forces against a threatening Erdogan.
I am curious, and I want to hear your view about the choreography of the Trump administration with regard to escalating Turkish-Greek tension. Pompeo visited Cyprus, the Secretary of State, and had some messages from there, and again repeated the messages. We told both sides to basically back down and pull the brakes, and in not in those terms, but in essence, these messages. But it seems that with the lifting of the arms embargo to Cyprus and the overall choreography of Pompeo's visit to Cyprus, and also the role of the American ambassador in Athens, etc., and also the buildup of the military in around Alexandroupolis, which is a border town to Turkey, we see a sort of a discrete positioning of the United States, perhaps as some would say, with regard to Turkey going more and more astray in this crisis, in the regional crisis, as a in the big context. How should we read into the American positioning in this crisis?
I think it helps to read American posturing at three different levels. You know, at the interpersonal relations level between Presidents Trump and Erdogan, we see a relatively stable rapport that often ends up helping Erdogan, appeasing Erdogan by shielding him from sanctions and any serious pushback. At the other extreme, we see Congress and a bipartisan consensus that takes a very tough stance against Turkey, that sees also things in quite black and white terms, but in extremely critical terms, and just looking for opportunities to push back and punish Erdogan. But as you pointed out, I think the fine tuning of the meso level, what I call the institutions, especially the State Department and the Pentagon, offer us greater clues as to these tectonic shifts, these deep shifts in U.S. attitude toward Turkey. So as you pointed out, you know, the lifting of the U.S. arms embargo, you know, it's a temporary lifting. It concerns only non-lethal weapons. But nevertheless, you know, Pompeo's using of his national security waiver to lift the embargo against Cyprus after 33 years is significant. And
there are also talks about Incirlik Air Base being perhaps moved to Greek soil or Cypriot soil.
Or let's call it U.S. making contingency plans in the case that Incirlik Base will no longer be accessible, that there should be fallback options. And it will not be just one base to replace Incirlik, but, you know, multiple bases sharing burden in different ways. Mm-hmm. And definitely, you know, Crete and other parts of Greece happens to be part of that solution as well. So we are seeing this gradual, slow change at the level of the State Department and the Pentagon. And I think those should be more worrisome. I know they often find less airtime because they are less forceful than a positive comment by Trump or a harsh comment by the Congress. But that change, you know, the level at that meso level shows that deep down, the Erdogan government's policies have taken a major toll on U.S.-Turkish relations. And I think a good analogy would be to the maneuvering of an oil tanker. You know, it takes a long time for an oil tanker to change course. And it's a slow process, but once you are in that process, it is a major change, and it's difficult to turn it back. Mm-hmm. So I think this is where Turkey is. That is, Turkey is, I think, on the verge of Erdogan's Turkey is prompting a major course correction on the U.S. side. And this, of course, could take a much different shape if Biden and Harris happen to win elections in November. Turkey seems to have, or at least the Erdogan government seems to have, invested all its bets with the Trump administration and has taken, Biden head on, you know, through ad hominem insults and smear campaigns, not just in pro-government press, but by the highest level officials in Ankara. Now, this is, of course, is not necessarily a wise strategy and raises the question, what would the future of Turkish-U.S. relations would be if Biden, you know, takes the oath in January and basically strengthens this trend towards a course correction in bilateral relations. And of course, we should be watching out for CATSA sanctions, which according to the latest amendments in the National Defense Authorization Act, will force the U.S. president to issue the sanctions within 30 days of the passing of the bill, of its signing into law. And this, of course, will be compounded, possibly, by European Union sanctions that could result from the September summit, from the upcoming September summit. So this could end up being the perfect storm as Turkey faces, you know, it in late 2019, early 2020, two rounds of sanctions from both sides of the Atlantic. And I know some could argue that these sanctions could ultimately be mostly symbolic, but I think what people are missing is this. The sanctions matter more for their signaling value, because they are not only a foreign policy signal, but also an economic signal to global investors. And Turkey already has high-level macro risk, which is also evidenced by Moody's downgrading of Turkey's rating to deeper into junk. So Turkey is now 5 grades below, investment level. And when we take a look at Turkish equities and bonds, we see a huge exodus already. So even in the absence of sanctions, the investment of non-residents in Turkish bonds have come down to 5% from almost one third. And we see a similar exodus from Turkish equities, from Turkish stocks. So this, and we have also recently seen, you know, the German auto giant Volkswagen canceling its $1.4 right. billion dollars greenfield investment in a plant in Turkey. So when you put all of these together, Turkey is entering a very dangerous, not only foreign policy agenda or period, but also a key economic bottleneck. And the interplay between politics and economics, between diplomacy or sanctions and the economic and finance worlds, is, I think, one detail that the Erdogan government misses dearly.
The major components of the current Turkish foreign policy is what you would call tossing the dice, or playing some sort of poker, gambling basically, raising the hand and seeing if the other side blinks. And it doesn't seem to have responded positively as President Erdogan hoped, in terms of Libya, in terms of Syria. And now we just watched the moving target of Turkish-Greek crisis, again, with the ships being pulled back to Antalya port and etc. And seismic searches will continue or not. And those cards are being basically played as Trump cards in terms of pushing the Turkish agenda, foreign policy agenda or not. But meanwhile, on the other side, Greece seems to have played its diplomatic cards quite skillfully, being able to transform the crisis from being seen as Turkish-Greek crisis into Turkish-European Union crisis. And this will be the context of the next week's European Union summit. A lot of countries hesitating now see the Lisbon Treaty and the protection of the European Union territory, basically, rather than seeing it a crisis between two countries. And also France, I don't know if you would agree or not, but there is a view seeing that France hasn't really moved in order to confront Turkey per se, but in order to fill the vacuum left by the Trump administration in the Eastern Mediterranean, because of the concern shared by European Union that if this vacuum could be filled by Russia because of this necessitation, this has been seen before. So this is the large context, broad context. But again, back to the, it's a long question, but I wanted to bring the background to the viewers and listeners. Given the non-response to all these moves in Turkish foreign policy, be it Libya, Syria, or Greece now, Eastern Mediterranean in general, do you agree with the view shared by some people now that Turkish foreign policy, as conducted now, has more or less collapsed or has gone bankrupt, if you will?
Yes, because there are structural reasons for it. First of all, Turkish foreign policy is no longer carried out by the Turkish Foreign Ministry, which has a long historical trajectory going back not only to the Ottoman, you know, Dragomans, you know, the era, but also to the Byzantine Empire. Today, foreign policy is conducted by a narrow circle in Erdogan's palace by people who have Islamist credentials, but no foreign policy credentials, who see foreign policy first and foremost as basically managing the perception. So they think it's a media operation. They think it's a rhetorical feat. So that's at the root of the problem. But beyond that, we see not just with Erdogan, but even with, you know, Davutoğlu, who wrote, you know, a book titled Strategic Depth, what I call a complete lack of strategy, meaning a heavily tactical approach to foreign policy. It's more about short-term tactical, you know, maneuvers.
No strategy.
No strategy whatsoever, no grand strategy. And worse, they're rolling the dice in a chess game. And there is never any thought given to the next move or the next set of moves. And we have seen this with the downing of the Russian jet in 2015. We have seen this with Turkey's Syria policy. We are seeing this now with the Eastern Med. We saw it in Libya. We saw it in the refugee crisis in Thrace. And Erdogan's thinking is, you know what, if it doesn't work, I can take a U-turn. It doesn't matter, I control 95% of the Turkish media, and my grassroots, my loyal grassroots, will stay with me no matter what I do. So
also even the opposition, parts of the opposition.
Parts of the opposition will be on board if they believe this is part of Turkey's nationalist dogma. So that also gives Erdogan some comfort that parts of the opposition will have to rally around the flag, and my own crowd, they'll buy whatever I'm selling them. For example, we have seen this with Russia being the arch enemy, and then we have seen this Russia being presented as the key ally, and another set of U-turns. We have seen this in relations with the Assad regime. We have seen this with the refugee crisis. So there is absolutely no coherence and no shame from the incoherence and the embarrassing U-turns. And the AKP's, you know, organic intelligentsia in the pro-government media actually managed to play along extremely well. And they have absolutely no shame in diametrically opposing what they have written only a week ago, if that is what Turkish foreign policy's U-turns necessitate. So when you put all of these together, of course, it leads to a grand erosion of credibility and legitimacy for Turkey. So yes, Turkey is still, you know, legally, you know, a member of the Council of Europe, a member of NATO, part of the OECD, OSCE, you know, dozens of Western and transatlantic institutions, but nominal membership is quite different than kind of a bona fide membership, both in terms of your sense of belonging, as well as your peers' sense of acceptance. So This is leading to what the Turkish government calls a precious, you know, loneliness. But one would rather call this isolation. Turkey is very effectively self-isolating. And to make matters worse, all the long list of countries, state and non-state actors, Turkey has been threatening, are basically huddling together, are coming together, fearing Erdogan's expansionism, irredentism, and belligerence. And this is leading to a containment policy. So when containment meets self-isolation, I think that's the recipe for disaster. And the worst part of this is the emerging containment policies are then perceived by the Erdogan loyalists as the presence of a grand conspiracy, a global conspiracy. So their paranoia forces them into taking even more radical steps. So it's spiraling down. Basically,
it's a vicious circle.
It's a vicious circle. They are taking even more hardline steps, and this is isolating Turkey further. And the key question is, how long can this last? Now, politically, possibly Erdogan's iron-fisted rule can sustain the system. By the use of the military and the police and the new brown shirts and the night watchmen, you know, all these new instruments of coercion. But economically and financially, I would argue that this cannot hold. This cannot go on forever. Already, Turkey's foreign currency reserves, excluding swaps, are in the negative terrain. Turkey is deeper and deeper into the junk territory when it comes to its credit rating. Turkey's credit risk insurance is at an all-time high. And there is now debate to reclassify Turkey not as an emerging market, but as a frontier market. Now, all of this is signaling to global investors that Turkey is one market they should better avoid. And we're not talking about a frontier state that depends on petrodollars. We are talking about a state that needs to produce, export, and each year find hot money to basically sustain its chronic current account deficit. Now, such a Turkey cannot, I think, continue on this foreign policy track, given the drastic mismatch between the economic reality and the diplomatic reality.
Well, as you put it eloquently, I think we are, as observers of Turkey, somewhere between a security state looking pretty solid and a rapidly destabilizing economy, which is being a great challenge to Erdogan administration, and nobody can properly predict what the outcome will be. Let's leave it there. My guest today was Aykan Erdemir from Washington, D.C., Senior Policy Director with Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Thank you very much for this conversation, Aykan.
Thank you for having me.
You can follow Ahval News online podcast series through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, and Spreaker. All you need to know about Turkey is here, for your ears, mind, and attention. Thank you for listening to our podcast.